We have talked about it endlessly over the last decade or so, and we've accomplished close to zip.
We know enough about our climate problem to know that it's serious and that we need to get started right away.
What we're seeing right now is a clear loading of the weather dice.
It's Arctic fever this week. Welcome back, everybody. I'm NPR News Chief Meteorologist Paul Huttner. Uncharted territory is how some of the climate scientists like Jennifer Francis at Rutgers are putting what's happening in the Arctic this year. What has climate watchers' attention in the Arctic this year? Well, how about this? NASA's Earth Observatory measured temperatures 36 degrees warmer than average on parts of the Greenland ice sheet last month. Or it could be that NOAA satellites are seeing record low sea ice coverage in the Arctic. Since 1979, check this out, the Arctic has lost 620,000 square miles of winter sea ice cover. That's more than twice the size of Texas, folks. So how do we read the record warmth in these uncharted waters this year? And what does it mean for our weather patterns ahead? And why should we care? Mark Cerise is a senior research scientist at he's the director of the National Snow and Ice Data Center in Boulder, Colorado. Good morning, Mark. Welcome to ClimateCast.
Oh, glad to be here.
Hey, let's start with the past several months of record warmth in the Arctic. Kind of put this raw temperature data into perspective for us. This was the warmest winter and the warmest year on record so far in the Arctic. Is that right?
Yeah, we just keep breaking record after record. I mean, this entire winter and through this spring, I've never seen anything like it. We even had a short period at the end of 2015, right about at the new year, when temperatures at the North Pole almost reached the freezing point. It was a short event, but my gosh, I've never seen anything like it, and it shows no evidence of stopping. The sea ice cover is clearly responding to this warmth. As you say, right now we're about two Texases below where we ought to be in terms of ice extent. So it's pretty remarkable.
You know, the record low ice coverage we're seeing now, and I watch the daily graphs that you guys put out and update throughout the year. We're tracking well below the previous record of 2012. That's certainly true. You know, where does that lead us as we head into summer?
Well, we're starting off on a bad foot, obviously. Starting out the melt season, which is really starting to kick in just about now, actually, over a lot of the Arctic, we're on a bad footing because if you start things early, you're going to lose a lot of ice because there's a natural feedback in the process.
Mm-hmm.
If you get rid of it early, you'll tend to lose more. Now, where it's going to set up at the end of this summer, we actually don't know because one of the key things is what the weather patterns look like through the summer. If you continue a warm pattern through the summer, we're in big trouble. But you could also set up a cooler pattern, and then that would help to preserve some of the sea ice. And, of course, we really can't predict these weather patterns beyond sort of that 7 to 10 day time scale of, you know, numerical weather prediction. So we'll have to wait and see. Now, it can basically guarantee you that we are going to be far, far below average when we come to this September. That's a given. But where it sets up in the record books, we're just going to have to wait and see.
I'm meteorologist Paul Huttner. We're listening to ClimateCast on Minnesota Public Radio. We're talking to Mark Cerise. He's the director of the National Snow and Ice Data Center in Boulder, Colorado. They're the people that keep track of the snow and the ice all across our planet. If you have a question for Mark, give us a call. Now is the time, 651-227-6000, or you can call us toll-free at 800-242-2828. Mark, you lost an eye in the sky, the satellite that tracks Arctic ice. What happened there? Tell our audience what's going on.
Yeah, well, the good thing is we're back online right now.
Excellent.
What happened is that when we track sea ice, we rely on a particular type of satellite sensor. It's something called a passive microwave sensor. And basically, it's looking at the emission of microwaves from the surface. And the thing is that the emission of the microwaves from the surface, it doesn't care if there's clouds in the way. It doesn't care about polar darkness. And it gives us this continuous coverage. Turns out that different surfaces emit microwaves differently. And sea ice has a very particular signature, and we can pick that up. Well, the satellite that we were using to get this information, this what we call is the F-17 satellite, one of the sensors that we use basically failed. And so then we've lost that eye in the sky. Now, it turns out there's a series of these satellites up there, F-17, F-18, F-19. So we were scrambling to try and use one of these newer satellites. Now, we were going to use the F-19 satellite, the newest in the bunch. Mm-hmm. Well, it died. Satellites do that. It just died. So that put us in a lurch. So now we've got our eyes in the sky back using what we call the F-18 satellite. It's provisional data. We still have to do a few calibrations, but it's pretty good the way it is. And so, of course,
so it's accurate. You're confident with the readings in terms of Arctic ice coverage.
Oh yeah. There's a few adjustments we need to make, but certainly the numbers are quite good here. And so this idea, you know, that we're at record lows, absolutely. And there are other assets we have up there that can look at this as well, which we can, you know, use to confirm with what we're seeing. But we're quite confident in what we're seeing. But, of course, losing this satellite couldn't have come at a worse time, right? We're trying to track this. But that's the nature of the business that we're in. We have to be ready for these sorts of surprises.
Let's talk about Greenland, because that's getting a lot of press. The incredibly warm April there, I know it triggered early melt on the ice sheet about a month early, if I have the data right. How does that compare with 2012 as we look at Greenland?
Well, in terms of how it compares, we're going to have to wait and see. We had that early melt period, which caught a lot of people by surprise. But, of course, that was pretty early in the year. We haven't even gotten to the summer season yet. And that's when, of course, we see, you know, every year a lot of the ice sheet undergoing melt. Now, what happened in 2012 is that the entire ice sheet actually showed signs of melt in that summer, all the way at the top even, way, way up there.
Which is very rare, if not unprecedented,
right? Oh, yeah.
Right?
There's some evidence that it may have occurred before, but absolutely rare.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And overall, what you've been seeing through the years is this upward trend in how much of that ice sheet shows melt each year. It's a very jagged trend, like the sea ice. There's ups and downs, but overall up. 2012, we almost had the entire ice sheet showing melt. We'll see what happens this year. I would not at all be surprised if we see something similar, but we'll have to wait and see. But it is of increasing concern, because we know that the Greenland ice sheet is contributing to sea level rise, and the summer melt and runoff is one of the contributors to that. So we've got a lot of people looking at this problem.
Yeah, and I know one of those people is Jason Box, who's with the Dark Snow Project. I saw a tweet the other day. He's already seeing lower albedos in Greenland, potentially some of the soot from the Canadian wildfires. That may also contribute to a bigger meltwater season, depending on weather conditions, right? Because that sort of accelerates the snow and ice melt.
That's right. No, Jason is exactly right. Jason actually was a student of mine years ago. So that's how the generations work.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you darken that ice cover, what you do, of course, is you lower its reflectivity, which is called its albedo. You lower its albedo. But if you do that, then it means that more of the sun's energy is absorbed, which causes even further melt. So this is a very important feedback process in the Arctic. And this appears to be very relevant to what's going on the Greenland ice sheet. So again, there's a lot of people looking at that ice sheet with considerable concern right now.
We've got one here on the phone who has spent some time in the Arctic, Mike in Elk River. You've been way up north. Tell us what's going on up there.
Yeah, I work right up on the Belford Sea. I've been up there since 08, and I didn't believe in global warming. And, you know, I've always agreed that our planet is warming, but, you know, how much humans have to do with it, I was always kind of skeptical of that. But there's no doubt that this is by far the warmest winter I've ever experienced up there. You know, we were 10, 20 above in January, which is just absolutely unheard of. You know, 4 years ago, you know, 40 below is the warmest it got in January. So it's been substantially warmer. And I know for us in the industry I work in that, you know, the tundras, you know, it's such a valuable asset to us, because if it thaws out, you know, we can't, the roads will just start to sink into the tundra, and the pipelines will start to settle. And we're having a lot more of those settling issues too. So,
and Mike, what industry do you work in up there? Oh, I think we lost him. He may have cut out. Anyway, Mark, great perspective. And what caught me with that call is that it kind of took him seeing firsthand the changes in the Arctic to really accept the science behind climate change. Is that something that you've observed as well?
Oh, sure. Myself, I was, until about the year 2003, 2004, I was kind of a fence-sitter on this whole issue myself. And the issue was, we saw these changes emerging in the Arctic, a warming of the Arctic. We saw the sea ice starting to decline. But it wasn't clear to me whether this was, say, human-caused or could just be sort of part of the natural variability in the system. But then the data just became irrefutable. And so it was around 2003, 2004, I said myself, yeah, this is it. And in terms of what's happening in the Arctic around now, around the Beaufort Sea, I wish I was up there this year. Every year over the last 8 years, I've been doing some work up on the north slope of Alaska, way up there, doing snow work. And it'd be pretty hard to do that right now. People in Alaska are very concerned about this. I was just talking to some of my colleagues at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and they say they've just never seen a spring like this or a winter like this, so warm. Sea ice in the Beaufort Sea is way below normal. There's very large open water areas where there shouldn't be. So, again, it's been a crazy winter and spring.
And we know, or it seems we're learning, that the changes in the Arctic seem to be happening perhaps a little faster than at the other end of the planet, in the Antarctic. And Audrey from Minneapolis is here, and I want to ask her what she thinks about that and her question. Audrey, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I had the opportunity to work in Antarctica several years ago, and that was in 2007-08. And while I was there, I was at McMurdo. They say that the ice isn't melting as fast on that side, but they have had people that were down there before I was down there said that there was a big change, and that there used to be snow all the way up to a certain point, and now I had to carry my skis over rocks. And I know in the western Antarctic ice shelf, there's been a lot of concern about the melting going on in the calving of the great glaciers. And so I was wondering if you could address what's going on in Antarctica as well.
Mark, how do we put that in perspective?
Yeah. So if we look at the two poles, they are behaving differently. The Arctic is where we've really seen these rapid changes. Now, the Antarctic is changing, but so far it hasn't been so fast. Now, there's a lot of very, very good reasons for this, but basically it boils down to geography. The Arctic is an ocean surrounded by land. The Arctic is a high ice sheet surrounded by ocean. And just basically because of that, they're going to behave very, very differently. Also, our ocean circulation in the Antarctic is very different. But the Arctic is changing. And the way we've kind of always viewed this is that the Arctic is that sleeping elephant that is now starting to stir. We know that the Antarctic ice sheet is contributing to sea level rise. We're seeing these big ice shelves start to disintegrate, changes in snow cover and like that. So the Arctic has really led the way. The Antarctic has lagged behind, but it's going to catch up.
And I've seen some research recently. I know a paper came out that suggests maybe what they call the thermohaline circulation, these ocean currents, there could be as much as a 200-year time lag right before they start really affecting the Antarctic ice.
Yeah, that's quite true, and I mentioned this in terms of the different ocean circulation. The way the ocean circulation in the Antarctic works is that there's a big upwelling of cold waters around the coast, and that basically acts as a natural thermostat. That's one of the things that helps to keep the Antarctic cooler than the Arctic, but that can't go on forever. Eventually, things will have to change.
Now, let's go back to Greenland for a second, or specifically north of Greenland. I know we've been seeing some unusual fractures in the ice sheet north of Greenland. What's going on there, and why is that important?
Yeah, well, you're really talking about the sea ice cover
north of
Greenland.
Correct.
What we've been seeing through the winter is this very extensive fracturing of ice up in the Beaufort Sea, north of Canada and north of Alaska. And that has been due to a interesting pattern of atmospheric circulation that is causing stresses in the ice, causing these big cracks to appear and breaking into these tremendously big flows. Now, it's doing that more readily now because the ice is a lot thinner than it used to be, mm-hmm. and so it's more likely to fail. So that's probably what we're seeing. But just last week, we were noticing that this big fracturing was extending – way out into the Arctic Ocean to north of Greenland. So I'd never seen anything like that. And so we're talking about big cracks in the ice, so, you know, 10 kilometers wide or something like this. And certainly I've never seen it. But I think what it really is telling us is that the Arctic sea ice cover is now thinner than it used to be. And if it's thinner than it used to be, it's more easy to disrupt it and cause these big fracturing events.
The jet stream and weather patterns, I know Jennifer Francis has done a lot of work on that. What's the latest science and your take on Arctic warmth and how it affects our weather here in Minnesota and the U.S. and other places?
Yeah. Well, what we've seen this year is that the atmospheric circulation in the Arctic has certainly been unusual, and that has helped transport a lot of heat into the Arctic. People are actually looking at that, you know, very carefully now, like why that was. Was there an El Nino link to that? There probably was, but we're still working on that. But the other issue, of course, is that a lot of people are talking about is how changes in the Arctic, and particularly the loss of sea ice, which causes an immense warming of the Arctic, contributes to it, that could be affecting jet stream patterns that affect weather patterns in the middle latitudes. In other words, it goes the other way. What happens in the Arctic affects what happens in the middle latitudes. And it's a very, very controversial issue. There's evidence that this is in fact happening. That's where Jennifer has been working on. I've worked with Jennifer for many years. But there's other camps out there who are saying, wait a minute, I don't really see it yet. And so the jury is still out, but this is a very, very active area of research and a very, very important one, because if the Arctic is in part responsible for some of this crazy weather we've been experiencing in the middle latitudes, well, we would really like to know how that works.
Yeah, we would. Mark, this is a fascinating discussion. Thank you so much for your insight today.
It's my pleasure.
That's Mark Cerise. He's the director of the National Snow and Ice Data Center in Boulder, Colorado. That's it for ClimateCast this week. Thanks for listening, everybody.